And welcome to Hour 2 of In the Moment. Steve Zwentke filling in for Lori Walsh. Gear Up continues to grab headlines. There's a new mayoral candidate in Sioux Falls, and Kristi Noem's campaign gets a boost from Congressman Trey Gowdy. It's time for the Dakota Political Junkies, our weekly roundtable on In the Moment. And today we welcome journalist and blogger Denise Ross from Rapid City. Hi, Denise.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Yeah, great to have you with us. And in Sioux Falls, we welcome Argus leader, columnist, and reporter Jonathan Ellis. How are things at 10th and Minnesota today?
You know what, Steve? It's gorgeous outside.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, very nice day.
Very good. Well, we'll see if we can take advantage once we go through some, we've got a heap of Gear Up information. We'll just put it that way. Front and center again this week, we have whistleblowers, audits, and feuding lawmakers. Jonathan, your colleague Dana Ferguson has been reporting on this. So let's begin with the emails of former South Dakota Indian Education Director Roger Campbell. He was alerting the Secretary of Education to malfeasance way before the news of the Westerhouse deaths in Platte. Specifically, what was Campbell saying in his emails?
Well, he was concerned that Westerhouse, Scott Westerhouse, who was the business manager at Mid-Central, and had also was a financial officer at the American Indian Institute for Innovation, which was receiving federal money and administering these grants, and that there was clearly a conflict of interest there. That conflict of interest has certainly been outlined in the past, in past media stories, back when this all blew up in 2015. But to actually see public officials warning about it in emails, and he, of course, wasn't the only one. You have his predecessor, Luann Wardell, also who had been warning that there were issues with the bookkeeping and potential conflicts of interest, so that those warnings had been made, you know, well in advance of what, you know, turned out to be this cataclysmic event in Platte, in which a man murders his family as they're about ready to, you know, begin auditing. So the warnings were out there, you know, 2 or 3 years before all of that, and it appears possibly that while the Secretary Department of Education started taking steps to monitor these funds and monitor what was going on, that it probably wasn't enough or it wasn't quick enough.
Mm-hmm. So the Education Secretary's office, have they said anything about these emails over the last couple of days, and what exactly did they do with them since these came in beginning in 2012?
Well, I mean, they indicated that, for one thing, I guess they indicated that in the first instance of Ms. Wardell, that there was sort of some office animosity, or, you know, but I mean, their contention has been, look, we started putting things in place to monitor the transactions. You know, we were taking steps to you know, audit them, that kind of thing. So, you know, they've tried to portray this as they were taking action, and clearly from the emails that Roger Campbell had been sending in 2012, I mean, beginning in April and then again in August, then I don't think that he felt that the state was moving fast enough.
Yeah, this looks to be one of the bigger news stories again in 2017. Denise, the audit that we heard news of yesterday is showing that the money wasn't necessarily from Gear Up, but from Mid-Central. Can you explain that situation and maybe tell us a little more about the news of the audit that came out yesterday?
Well, I'll tell you what, I have to admit, I'm getting a little bit confused about some of this stuff, and I think if I'm getting confused, I'm guessing that a lot of readers and listeners and watchers out there are getting confused about exactly what happened. And I think we you know, those timelines that are out there for the Russia investigation into the Trump administration and his campaign, I think those would be super helpful at this point in the Gear Up investigation, because I'm starting to lose track of who said what to whom when, and there's so many different people involved. And it's starting to get the feel. There was a point during the EB-5 when that was really big where it felt like a Coen Brothers movie. You could just kind of close your eyes and envision the movie playing on the screen.
Yeah.
And I hate to say the guy's name again, but Yoak Bolin was sort of out of central casting for a Coen Brothers character. But now, and this doesn't have that same feel of sort of hubris, but it has a feel of a cinematic quality where you can imagine the new Secretary of Education coming into her job and being confronted with this right away. And certainly she was around and was probably aware of situations, but now she's in charge and has to make decisions. And you have to kind of rewind the clock when there's not hard evidence of a crime. You know, that's a tough position to be in. And so certainly mistakes were made, if we can use the passive voice and not assign blame to anyone at this time. But you know, certainly things went off the rails. Exactly how and exactly when, you know, that's something, as I said, that can be very cinematic, and I think a timeline would be very helpful to people trying to understand all the moving parts. As for the audit showing the money not being for gear up, and I've just read the reporting on this, but it looks like that just went to different programs, but it still went through, because Mid-Central did more than just administer the gear up grant. If I remember this correctly, it went through the Mid-Central co-op, but just not to the Gear Up program. And Jonathan, correct me if I'm getting that part wrong.
No, I think you're right. Yeah.
There were 14 school districts in central South Dakota where this money apparently came from. Armour, Burke, Colombe, Corsica, Ethan, Gregory, Kimball, Mount Vernon, Plankinton, Platt Geddes, Stickney, Wessington Springs, White Lake, and Woolsey Wessington. Jonathan, is there any more to this audit that we need to know about as this story continues?
Well, I want to know a lot more about it, and I think we will be fine. You know, I mean, with the state demanding money back, I mean, I don't understand exactly how that with commingling of funds, you could just say, well, it wasn't any of the gear up money. I mean, you know, so there are still, in my mind, still plenty of questions about whose money was it, where did the money come from, how can you just simply blanketly, you know, just say it wasn't gear up money. So, I mean, there are still a lot of questions, and I think that the school districts, you know, that obviously they have to answer yet on, you know, how they're going to proceed with, you know, with the state wanting money back from them. So I think that we'll probably get in the very near future some more arguments or explanations or questions about whose money, where the money came from, all of that. And so I think there are a lot of unanswered questions.
I think this also kind of goes into Denise's movie that she's about ready to write here.
I would buy a ticket to that.
I want to get into the issue of the lawmakers and how we have lawmakers on the same side of the aisle that have split a little bit due to the gear up issue. Stace Nelson has been very outspoken on this. I've heard him a couple of times on Greg Belfridge's program in Sioux Falls, and he and Deb Peters are in a little bit of a disagreement on some of these issues. Jonathan, can you tell us more about how this started and where their relationship is right now?
Well, it doesn't seem like it's in a very good place. you know, I think that, you know, he has accused her and others on that committee of, you know, intentionally not wanting to get to the bottom, and this is the government operations and audit committee, of intentionally not wanting to get to the bottom of this whole scandal, and of course even the EB-5 scandal. And, you know, so his contention is that committee should be much more aggressive, the legislature should be much more aggressive in getting to the bottom of this, you know, and others, and Deb Peters is just saying, well, look, I mean, this is the realm of the Division of Criminal Investigation. You know, they're the ones with the ability to investigate this kind of thing. Why would we duplicate their efforts does the legislature even have sort of the authority to do that? So those are the various arguments. People who know Stace Nelson know that he is very opinionated, outspoken. He doesn't really couch his feelings in sort of diplomatic ways. And, you know, so he's, and on the other side, you've got Deb Peters, who's been a lawmaker now for many years. She's got some of the most seniority out there in Pierre right now. And so they just come from, although they're both Republicans, they just come from sort of different sides of that Republican Party.
Denise, there are some lawmakers that are kind of siding with either Deb Peters or Stace Nelson on this. How about out in the Black Hills? Are any of the lawmakers as involved in these two are right now?
You know, I'm not sure about that, but I would tell you after having attended Cracker Barrels here for a few years, and I was at an event yesterday where somebody questioned the speaker, and he said, out here our bipartisan politics are conservative Republican and ultra-conservative Republican. And you see that, you certainly see that at the Cracker Barrels here, and you see that in Pierre, and it's very vivid. There's no subtlety about it anymore. People have pretty much taken sides, and so I think that's what you're seeing is Stace would be in that category of ultra-conservative Republican, and he's got, you know, his people around him. There's definitely a lot of the Rapid City legislators are in that category. Not all of them, but a lot of them are. And so I think you can pretty easily see the lines being drawn, just as if it were a partisan, you know, purely partisan division.
Yeah. Well, as John McLaughlin would have said, I want to get out. So let's move on to let's move on to e-commerce. The e-commerce law brought in $1.6 million in its first year, but apparently officials say it could have been a lot more. Denise, why is this?
Well, I think it's the nature of internet commerce, and this goes back well over a decade when people in Pierre were wringing their hands over how to get the tax revenue from the sales that were being made online and sales tax not being collected, and the state was losing out on revenue. And I think it's the sense I'm getting is that it's reached a crisis point now where they really need to do something. And recently they reached an agreement with Amazon to collect sales tax, which I thought would cover the lion's share of online purchases, quite frankly. But then I read today that not every seller on Amazon is doing that. It's just the company itself. So if you're buying from one of these third-party sellers, that doesn't necessarily mean the sales tax is getting collected. And so you've got this still got sort of a mess on your hands. I think the state is making progress in a lot of ways, but there's still a long way to go. And there's this court case that's going to the state Supreme mm-hmm. Court that was, it was funny, the state hopes to lose that case so that they can go to the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn an earlier ruling about collecting internet sales tax from businesses that don't have any physical presence in the state. They've gotten to the point, which is really a crisis for if you're a Republican in this state, if they can't solve the sales tax problem, then they're going to have to consider an income tax, and that would be a major, major shift in the culture of South Dakota government.
Yeah, we haven't seen too many Republicans propose something like that in quite some time. Jonathan, is this money earmarked for anything special? Does this go into our general fund? Where does the money collected go?
You're talking about on the internet sales tax,
right?
My understanding is it would be part of just the regular sales tax revenue
sure,
that they collect
sure.
now. If I'm wrong about that, Denise can correct me, but you know they're
no.
You know, and of course that sales tax. I mean, that sales tax pays for an awful lot in South Dakota because we don't have the income tax. And
right.
So, you know, you're talking about aid for education. You're talking about our judicial system. You're talking about prisons. I mean, so it's the primary funder for state and local governments actually. So. It's an important source of revenue for this state, no doubt about it. And the case that Denise refers to is being watched across the nation because it is sort of the fast track vehicle that advocates for allowing governments across the country to collect sales tax. This is the vehicle for that to happen. So when this goes to the U.S. Supreme Court, almost certainly will. This will be a landmark case.
Yeah, and Victoria Wicks of SDPB has been covering that for us, and we'll have continuing coverage from Victoria as well. Jonathan, the founder of ClickRain, a Sioux Falls marketing company, has announced that he's running for mayor of Sioux Falls. What do we know about Paul Tenhaken?
Well, as you said, he's the founder of ClickRain. He is sort of in a transitional period right now where I believe he stepped down as CEO. And so, but ClickRain is a sort of social media site. I'm most aware of them through the work that they've done on behalf of political candidates. They've been involved working on behalf of some Republican campaigns in the past. And And I will say that the work that I've seen them do in the past on that area has been very good, very competent work on behalf of political candidates. You know, Paul, I think, has worked for Republicans. He's going to be, you know, he's kind of a more of a laid-back guy. It sounds like he's a guy who said that he's kind of more comfortable in jeans and suits, things like that. So he brings sort of a younger mentality, perhaps, to this race than maybe what we've seen in past races with you know, older people running. I think he's only about 39, 40. So, you know, a different mentality. He brings this sort of businessman's mentality to the race. And frankly, historically in Sioux Falls, outsiders have done very well at winning mayor's races. They typically have not come from city council candidates. So, you know, history already is sort of on his side.
The field is starting to get crowded now, too. I believe there's 7 or 8 candidates running for mayor in Sioux Falls. Where do you see him kind of fitting in? I mean, is this a man that may have an actual chance at winning?
I think very much so. I would put him, that 7, I would say, and no disrespect for them, but I mean, you know, there are people who have, you know, who have the backgrounds already. He certainly has that. I would put him in top, you know, there are 3 candidates, I think, right now who you would look at and say they've got potential. They've got support maybe in the business community. They've got some political support already. So those, you know, certainly he fits into that group, no doubt about it.
Lastly, Kristi Noem had a special guest in Rapid City with her earlier this week to raise money for her campaign as governor. Trey Gowdy, a well-known Republican congressman from South Carolina, was in Rapid City with Kristi Noem. Denise, can you tell us a little bit about the visit and what happened there?
Well, I was not invited to the fundraiser, and I didn't write the $1,000 check to get in, so I wasn't there, but I can just tell you that, you know, Kristi Noem, Congresswoman Noem, this is not her first, you know, demonstration of having powerful friends, even as a member of Congress. You know, she's been known to be buddies with Speaker Paul Ryan. They work out in the congressional gym in the mornings together, and Trey Gowdy is well known for running the Benghazi hearings. Love him or hate him for that, but he certainly made an impression and made a name for himself doing so. And I'm going to guess that he's a pretty big draw in Republican circles. And if you put this in the context of her running against Marty Jackley, who is a prosecutor and a former U.S. attorney, Trey Gowdy is a former U.S. attorney, a prosecutor. So it could be her trying to burnish her credentials in the law enforcement world and make contacts and reach out to that community. It certainly isn't going to hurt her in a Republican gubernatorial primary to bring in somebody like Trey Gowdy. I'm going to guess that that was a very well-attended event.
Yeah, that's interesting, too. Jonathan, would an endorsement like this particularly cripple any of the other candidates in their run at governor?
Endorsements rarely cripple anything, or frankly, I mean, I agree that it's probably, certainly doesn't hurt her. But, you know, a lot of the law enforcement people are going to go with Marty Jackley simply because he comes from that world. Endorsements really don't do a lot, frankly.
Yeah. All right. Want to thank you. Jonathan Ellis is a columnist and a reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Thank you very much for your time, Jonathan.
Thanks, Steve.
And journalist and blogger Denise Ross joined us from Rapid City. Denise, always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.